guys, welcome back to the 51 Yard Line, episode 22? Yeah, episode 22. Mm-hmm. It's been a couple weeks since we've done one, so I just completely spaced it.
Double dips.
For those of you who don't remember, since we've been gone so long, my name is Tyler Berry. To my left, as always, the incorrigible Drew Willers.
I'm just here so I won't get fined.
To my other left, the pride of outside Boston, Christian Schneider.
Thank you. I can't really top what Drew just said, so I'm just going to say hello.
And to my other, and to my third left, the king of Fort Lauderdale, Steve Cravens.
Hello, everybody.
That's not a really kingly response, man. Like, you gotta give him something better.
You gotta
than that.
Pontificate.
Get down on your knees,
and
you know the rest.
Man, I thought we were gonna get dark there for a minute.
I was about to, and then
kept it PG. I like it.
I liked it.
I brought out the sun.
It's about the only thing we keep PG on this fucking show.
That will soon change.
There
we go. All right, well, let's do it. Let's talk.
Yeah, let's keep this short and sweet. Let's just talk. Let's talk some NBA finals.
Woo!
So we just, literally, just about 5 minutes ago, wrapped up Game 5 in Golden State. Golden State pulled away in the fourth quarter, ended up winning by 13, I believe. So thoughts, guys? What do we think going back to Quicken Loans for Game 6?
Game
Warriors
6
up
is
three,
it ain't
two.
Over.
Game six
it
is
ain't
gonna
over.
Be wild.
It's
gonna
not
be
over.
Crazy.
It's
gonna
be
a war.
Because we gotta do game six.
No. But like, even I mean, like, people are saying that Warriors are gonna win automatically at Cleveland. Nope.
Oh, it's definitely not automatic.
Nope.
That crowd is gonna be insane.
But not just that. Yeah. But think about it. LeBron is it at home. He has a chance not to win at all, but a chance to keep it going just a little bit longer. Think about how devastated he would be to let his hometown down by losing the NBA Finals in their building. Did they do that in 2007, or did the Spurs win
yes.
it in San Antonio? They lost
Spurs,
in Cleveland.
Spurs won in Cleveland.
Spurs won in Cleveland.
Yeah, because they got swept.
Because it was.
I didn't know Cleveland had the first two games, though. I didn't know if San Antonio had the first two, and then.
I mean, to be fair, it was LeBron and the Boy Scouts of America playing. Against
much
the, Spurs.
The way it's going this time around.
After game two and three, well, and even game one, even though they lost it, like it's his support team has completely fallen off.
Yep.
What there was of a support team has completely just gone back to looking like the guys that didn't play during the regular season or much of the postseason.
We're starting to see why J.R. Smith's trade value was so low.
Yep.
Right. And in the bottom line, I mean, well, you know, if anybody's been watching the NBA Finals, they've seen these mic'd up sessions, and Steve Kerr, like, in multiple games, has been like, listen, they're playing seven guys. They're going to wear down. And this is the second game in a row where it's been a pretty close game throughout, and then the Warriors just slapped him in the fourth quarter. And it's because the Cavs are running out of gas. They're not playing with enough players. They're tired. And that their lack of depth as a result of injuries has come back to haunt them.
Mm-hmm.
It's paying a price now.
Well, one thing I noticed, though, is that even though both teams, every single game that I've seen so far, both teams just start out terrible basketball. Turnover after turnover, miss shot after miss shot.
That first quarter was really bad tonight.
The only difference is that the Warriors, even though you know it was closer to you know in the third quarter or whatnot, I mean, the Warriors are always the ones who end up figuring out how to pull out the game. They didn't do it in game three
yeah.
in Cleveland. They didn't do it in game two at home.
Yep.
And to be fair, you know, with all the, I mean, I was bitching to you guys about all the terrible officiating against the Warriors towards the end in the fourth quarter. Like, I don't care how much you hate the Cavs, you got to admit that the play calling against the Cavs was just atrocious.
Yeah.
So they deserve that win. But they can't figure it out. They just can't do it, man.
You know, just thinking about this, building kind of off what we're talking about here, it occurs to me in all five games, whether they've won or lost, the Warriors have closed better than the Cavs. I mean, game one, the Cavs jumped on them early. Warriors came back and won. Game two, the Cavs were winning. Warriors came back, forced OT, but lost. Game three, the Cavs are up by 20. The Warriors got it down to one
mm-hmm.
in the fourth, and then they ran out of gas. Games four and five, they've come away in the fourth quarter. So you're seeing, you know, throughout this series that the Cavs are wearing out, and you're right. I mean, it's just, you know, as LeBron has been historically good, and that's something I think we should touch on, but it's not enough. I mean, he's running out of gas, and so are his teammates. They just don't have the final burst at the end.
And that's where you need Kyrie Irving, and admittedly Kevin Love as well.
Yeah.
You need finishers. You need guys that...
Or guys that to carry them so that LeBron has the gas to finish.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is, LeBron is averaging a triple-double throughout these finals right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. But all those assists don't mean anything if they're not happening in the final quarter, or at the very least, the final, I would say, 16 minutes of the game. Like, midway through the third, Warriors started pulling away.
Yep.
And then all throughout the fourth. And he keeps taking... I mean, and after a while, the Cavs become one-dimensional. They're a completely one-dimensional team in the fourth. Completely one-dimensional. Because it's just iso ball with LeBron. He drives. Maybe he kicks. Maybe he takes it. Hopefully he gets fouled. Hopefully he makes it. But at that point, there's just way too much depth on the other side of the ball. The Warriors are way too loaded. And you just got Timothy Mozgov. I mean, if the Warriors are going to be playing small ball, he cannot be putzing around the bucket, losing the ball. Like, he needs to handle boards. He needs to handle the ball a lot better. It's just a shame that... And he should be able to. He really should. If you look at the size difference that he has on pretty much all these guys, I'm not saying... Obviously, the Warriors are way... Everybody on the floor is way more athletic than Mozgov, but...
Right.
If you're down around the bucket and you got your hands on the ball, you need to hang on to the ball. And if you're not going to go up strong, you need to make a clean pass out. And he's not doing that. And so credit to the Warriors for playing really good defense in that, right? But man, I'm blown away by LeBron. I know that he's got haters. I'm totally aware. But I'm blown away. Completely.
There's one of them sitting right here.
Completely
next to us.
Blown away.
I'll clear that up later.
But just building off what you're saying, though, Drew, about Mozgov, and watching these last two games, what needs to change if the Cavs are going to be able to pull this out at home and then have any hope of winning if they go back to Oracle, they need to get back to playing their game. Because what was working for them was being the bigger, more physical team, killing them on the boards,
and slowing the tempo
up, slowing the tempo down. Ever since Kerr, and this is the big switch of the series that everybody's going to be talking about if the Warriors go on to win this thing, when Kerr changed up his lineup, sat Bogut on the bench, because we haven't heard from Bogut for the last two games, and put Iguodala in there, put Green at the five, Barnes at the four, that completely changed the whole dynamic of the series. Because right now, Mozgov barely played in this game, and he's been putting in good minutes for the Cavs. The Cavs have completely decided, all right, fine, we have to counter the Warriors' game. And they went small as well. They can't do that. They don't have the depth. They don't have the athleticism. They don't have the shooters. And they need to figure out in Game 6 how they can make the Warriors play their game. They need to start Mozgov. They need to pound it inside. They need to make it physical and gritty because they can't win a track meet.
There were opportunities early for Mozgov to really get the Cavs up early.
Yeah.
They got him some good looks, and he took some...
Yep.
It's just ass terrible shots. I don't know if he just... I don't watch enough Cavs ball. I don't know if he just has a lack of technique, if he doesn't have any post moves, but he just... You would think, without Bogut down there or another big man to truly combat his size, that he should be able to get his way with it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. And I don't know, I don't know what more, I mean.
He's not athletic.
No, I mean, no, but that's what I'm saying. You would just think with the size, though, and he's got just some wide open looks at the bucket. He had so many good opportunities early, missed some shots, Warriors took it down the other end, made their baskets, Cavs had to take an early timeout, pulled Mozgov, and granted, early on, while everybody's still fresh, I feel like the Cavs were able to a degree throughout the first half. I mean, there were, what was it, 50-51 in the first half?
Yep.
It was largely small ball versus small ball.
Yep.
But they run out of gas.
Yes.
And that's where Mozgov either early on right away needs to jump all over it, or later on needs to make the most of what he gets.
Right.
Because he was absolutely getting some good looks early and was not taking advantage of them.
Right.
Steve, you had a question that you were talking about, you wanted to ask us.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll tell you guys my answer afterwards, but I was asking this to a couple people back home and at work. And I want to ask you guys, assuming that they lose in Cleveland or whatever, let's say they win in Cleveland or they lose in Golden State. Let's say they lose the NBA Finals.
Okay.
LeBron's 2 of 6. Despite the great performance that he's had, a career best, really, right, in the finals?
This easily.
Is a career best for LeBron James, right?
He's getting 40-point games again and again.
He loses, he goes 2 for 6. In terms of, I mean, I know Jordan will always be considered the greatest of all time, but like in terms of like, you know, one of the greatest of all times, do you think people will always use that 2 of 6 record to, and always hold that against him? And will that always, in your opinion, yes or no, it doesn't matter, will it always pull him down in the rankings of greatest of all time because of that finals record? Not necessarily because of his performance in those finals.
Well, it depends on, for starters, what happens after these finals.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, he's still got years of, you know, good basketball left in him.
True.
But I mean, if people were to, like, hit on him for being 2 of 6, I feel like that's a mistake. Because this, say they lose game 6 and they're done. They lose, like, this series and 2007, they're just not on LeBron. He played against better teams, played well, and lost because he didn't have a good supporting cast. I mean, so these two, at least I can, you know, exempt him from the blame. I mean, it will hurt his legacy being 2 of 6. I mean, all the other great players, they generally won more finals than they lost. But it's, I think it would be unfair to be like, to hit him with that. Just like, you know, hitting Marino for never winning a Super Bowl.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I don't believe in knocking a player for getting to a place where most players don't ever get and
right.
not winning.
Right.
That's like, it's not fair to knock a player for getting to the finals and have it go against his legacy when there are plenty of players who you can consider some of the greats who never even got close to the finals.
Right.
To use your Dan Marino comment, that would be like not putting Peyton Manning at least in an argument to be in the same vein. It's not going to help. In the same vein as Dan Marino, just because Peyton's only 1 of 3, but Dan Marino never won.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's not fair. Like, the fact that you get there, that should count toward your legacy, not hinder it if you lose.
Right.
To answer your question, absolutely people are going to hold it against him.
They will.
And people hold less against him. You know what I'm saying? People take, I mean, people, for better or for worse, whatever the reason, people just don't like the guy. There are people that love him, but I would say there's quite a few, at least amongst fans. There's people, like players, other athletes in the league seem to adore him, seem to respect him. There's a few who don't, Joakim Noah. But for the most part, I would say, yeah, there's absolutely going to be people that do that. I do not. Certainly the first finals with the Heat, if you want to, yeah, simply because of the arrogance in which he brought that first year. You know, the not 3, not 4, not 5, not 6, not 7. If you know, I totally get that. As far as I'm concerned, every single finals that he is, as far as I can see, every finals that he's been in, when he's been in Cleveland, I mean, he's dragging dumpster fires to the pinnacle. Like, I mean, I just don't know what else you can say. Now, if you want to say he wasn't a great finisher or this and that, whatever. But no, I completely agree with Tyler. I completely agree with Christian. 2 of 6, he's got 2, and he's been to 6. So I there's been great players, Hall of Fame players that have never seen it.
And let's be real here. If the Cavs manage to pull this thing off, if they go home and win and then somehow win in Oracle and win this thing in 7, I mean, that's one of the best stories in the history of sports.
Forget the story. So, that's just one of the best performances.
Achievements. I mean, he's already playing out of his mind. But you think about it, like, I mean, at the very beginning of the season, nobody remembers. Like, they lost Varejao, their longtime mainstay at the pivot. They've lost Love. They've lost Irving. I mean, he's dragging a team where the second best player on his team right now is either Tristan Thompson or Dellavedova. I mean, you can make a case for Mozgov. It's like one of those three guys. I mean,
yeah.
Come on. I mean, if they manage to win this thing, then I mean, so yes, there are people going to hold against him for being 2 of 6, but if he's 3 of 6 and he won this way, he shoots way up the rankings.
That's a very, very
No, for sure.
Yeah,
but I just know, I mean, I know that, you know, there'll always be those guys, like, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the greats, you know, Chamberlain and Bryant, Jordan, and all these guys, they're always going to look at the finals record. I don't think it's fair.
I agree.
I think you should look at the performance within the finals. Like, if you have a garbage finals performance where you're averaging like 10 points a game or something like that, or 12 or 15 points a game, like, yeah, you should get some, you know, flack for it. But with the numbers he's putting up, with what he has around him, with the team he's going up against,
40-point triple doubles, like Kristen, you said right before we started the show.
That, but
that's
like,
obnoxious.
Forget the finals. Like, look at the playoff games that came before that. What, in my opinion, I'm going to bring this up.
Go for it.
His greatest performance of all time in any playoff game, whether it be the finals or any playoff game.
Can I guess?
Yes.
Game 6 in Boston.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I agree. That was horrible.
If they had lost that, laughingstock.
Yeah.
For life.
Yeah.
And they did.
Oh, yeah. That was a huge performance.
And the other thing, I was talking with a buddy that I went to school with back in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. His name's Xavier, and he's a big-time LeBron supporter, and he brought up a good point. He's a big-time LeBron supporter, and he's very vocal on Facebook about it, and he gets a lot of shit for it. But he brought up a point. Lots of guys were going after him with the MJ-Kobe argument, and the one thing Xavier said, and it really stuck out to me, and maybe this is more obvious to you guys than it was to me when he said it, but it hit me funny. He was like, the teams that Kobe and Jordan played with were teams that were constructed to allow those guys to shoot 30 times a game.
Yep.
LeBron's game is different. If you want him to win 5-6 finals or to win, he needs to be surrounded by guys that allows him to get 15 to 20 assists a game.
Yeah.
And I just thought that struck me funny because outside of the two finals that he won with the Heat, I don't think there was any – I can't think of any other player that he played with outside from Wade and Bosch that were just so good at closing. Yeah. And so good at finishing and scoring when he couldn't, when he needed to dish it.
Ray Allen.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Ray Allen was, you know, way past his prime at the time.
Oh, no, for sure.
He
was still making some very big clutch.
Yes, he was a clutch shooter, but he wasn't going to put 20 points a game.
But that's all. I guess that's what I'm saying is he just, you know, there's not a shooter right now that on the Cavs that is on the Ray Allen level during his prime or after his prime that can hit those shots. And he needs that.
You raise a great point. And here's the thing about what I would say to, like, you know, the people who are giving, like, the Kobe and Jordan arguments. It doesn't apply. Because Kobe and Jordan, you're absolutely right, because they actually play, you talk about, like, you know, a system where they're supposed to shoot 30 shots a game. It's the same system. It's the triangle, which is designed for an isolation shooting guard to just, you know, be able to get one-on-one coverage and do their thing in isolation and shoot a bunch of times. LeBron's not that guy. LeBron is not a score-first player, and that's what Kobe and Jordan are. So to have, you know, that kind of thing, Kevin McHale always made the point that he always puts Magic Johnson and Larry Bird slightly above Jordan because they could control the game with 10 shots. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to take more than 10 shots, and they could still be the best player on the court. Kobe and Jordan, that is not true of them.
Absolutely.
That could very well be true of LeBron because of his rebounding, because of his game-changing defense, and more than anything, because of his passing. And you're right. When he's trying to run the offense, I mean, look who he's throwing the ball to.
And for a while, it was where throughout most of the Eastern Conference playoffs, it was working because J.R. Smith didn't look like what he usually looks like. He was finishing, hitting buckets. Now, granted, they played the Celtics, and you know, we said this while we were watching. It would have been really, really interesting to see what a fully healthy Hawks team would have done against the Cavs team,
yep,
like what we saw. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case, and these things happen. And I also, you know, you can't take that away from the Warriors as well. You can't take it away that they are so well put together. Good teams have depth. Good championship teams have depth. Yeah. In all sports. It's the reason why guys like Malcolm Butler make the best, you make, you know, the interception on the final play of the game. It's depth.
Yep.
It's that next man up mentality. It's true in all sports, so nothing to take away. But you certainly can't. You can't take that away from LeBron. In you need to take into account who he's playing with. Right. Not everybody's going to do that.
Right.
So for better or worse, yeah.
And now let me clarify my position on LeBron real
Absolutely,
quick.
Absolutely, okay. Yes.
Okay, so yeah, I am eternally grateful for him coming to Miami, giving us four great years. I'm sick and tired of saying the only reason we won those two is because of him, because it's not true.
No, not at all.
There he had a stacked team around him. But that said, the 4 years he was there, aside from, forget about last year. Last year sucked, but the one year that sucked was when we lost the finals to Dallas. That was an abyss. But the other 3 years, even when we lost last year, just watching him, you know, tear ass, just watching him, you know, fuck shit up, that was great. When a player like that leaves a team who gave him all that success, because they did, they created the situation for him to get those rings. D-Wade took those, you know, salary reductions to get him and Bosch there. You know, Riley did all he could, trading players away left, right, center to get him there. When an organization does all this to get you there, to make you happy, to give you what you want, and then to just say, you know what, fuck you, I'm leaving, that's where I take offense. And I know he did it to Cleveland. It's the same reason he did it to Cleveland. You know what, you guys aren't putting the guys around me, fuck you, I'm going to leave. This time it was like, well, you know what, you guys are getting old, and, you know, I don't see a future here, so I'm going to leave. It's like, you know what, man, you had 1 year left on your contract. You could have left after that 1 year. You had a chance to go to the finals, fifth straight appearance with one team. You had a chance to do that. You had a chance to make history with your quote-unquote brothers that you love more than anything. You didn't do that. That still rubs me the wrong way. And then when he says, oh, the inner city youth of Cleveland, you know, need me. That's true. Good for you. There's still a lot of inner city youth in Miami that looked up to you, too, and you were their hero, too. And you left them stone cold, too. So two wrongs don't necessarily make a right here, man. So that's where I have an issue with him. I'm not saying he's a bad player. Quite the contrary, he's fucking amazing. But I still will always hold that against him for leaving history on the table, giving the middle finger to the people who gave you two of the best seasons you'll probably ever have. Who knows? He'll probably win another championship. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But they gave you your first two. And you played with guys who loved you and played their best ball around you and gave you some great memories. The fans adored you, you know, and just to just literally just say fuck all that just because we didn't win, that sends a bad message to you too. It's saying, you know, you don't win here, you know, it's okay to jump ship and go somewhere else. That's like the Larry Brown thing. Larry Brown used to do that back in the day, right? He would have stacked
over and over.
He would have stacked teams that just wouldn't make the cut, and then he'd just jump over to the next hot team at the time. And I'm not saying he's a bad coach. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that he would do that. If a team didn't cut it for him, he would jump ship to the next team. Like the 76ers in 2001,
yep.
2001, right?
Yep.
Jump ship to the Pistons, wins there, yay. And, you know, jump ship. You know, it's the way the NBA is. I get it. I don't like it. It is what it is, but it still sends the wrong message. In order to win, you got to jump ship. Maybe that is what it takes. I mean, Tyler, we were talking about this today. We're talking about, will there ever be a player like Jordan that sticks out his entire career with one team and wins with that team over and over again? Will we ever see that again? And I was kind of hoping you would say, yeah, probably, but you're right. Nope, we're not going to see it ever.
Kobe was the shot, but then he took that nightmare contract.
Yeah. And I think that
he still won five at the Lakers.
He did.
And he's going to retire a Laker.
Yes, but he's not.
That nightmare contract tarnishes his legacy a little bit.
He chose money over the opportunity to win.
Yep.
And he knew he couldn't win.
That's fine, but what I'm saying is he's still stuck with the same. Like, yeah, he took a lot of money,
no,
but
no,
he's still stuck with the same team.
Because, you know, the Lakers would pony up.
I was gonna say there's not another team that's gonna give him the money that he asked.
Well, no,
for.
No, but
so
right on. But
there
were free agency periods where he could have left.
Yes.
There are plenty of teams that would have done whatever they could to get Kobe Bryant.
You're not.
D-Wade could have left Miami in 2010 to go to the Bulls.
You're not wrong.
You're also not taking in the fact that people don't want to play with Kobe.
Absolutely,
no, they
not
don't.
At all.
No, that's fine. But listen, my point is,
I see
we'll
saying.
Never have
yeah,
players
yeah.
like that anymore
yeah,
that
I,
stay.
I just don't want. I guess I totally see what you're saying.
Wait, hold on. I think we're missing a big guy here, Tim Duncan.
Yeah, but we're talking like this next generation.
The next generation for the future.
Right?
Like
I
we're
guess
never
with,
gonna
oh,
see
from
it.
From now
we
can,
on,
yeah, we consider. I'm assuming you guys consider Duncan. Like the last of the era
yeah.
of
yeah.
the Jordan in the 90s.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
yeah.
Okay,
yes.
yeah,
yeah.
Future,
yeah.
I agree.
I'm talking like Kevin Love will not retire a member of the Thunder. Russell Westbrook probably won't retire him.
I mean, Kevin Durant.
I'm sorry.
We got you.
I was going to say, I agree.
Kevin Durant will not retire.
No, you don't know
a member of the Thunder.
A member of the Thunder. Russell Westbrook will probably not retire a member of the Thunder. Like, it's just...
James Harden probably won't retire a Rocket.
No, I don't.
Dwight Howard won't. So well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, that's just the NBA we're dealing with today. We don't see any loyalty.
No matter how good you are, like, if it boils down to a... something of like too much money or not willing to put up the money to get the players needed to surround your best player, like players will leave and it will continue to happen because at the end of the day, the NBA is just a business. It's literally just a clever, entertaining way to make money. And it's sad to break it down that way, but that's all it boils down to.
That's why it killed me. Like when this whole thing like, oh, D-Wade might leave. And I think Drew, you're the one who said like, Do you really care? I mean, like, how many good years do you think you could get out of him? It's like, it's not that. It's just that you want the guy to have his entire career there. You want him to retire. You want him to be one of the last guys to stay his entire career.
Absolutely. I just, I guess I should clarify what I meant. At what cost do you want it? Do you want the Kobe contract? And then do you want to have the life sucked out of your franchise? No. Or do you want that? Because if Wade really, really loves Miami and he really wants to stay there, and he really wants to do right by the organization, I'm not telling somebody they should take less money or more money. I don't know what I would do in that situation. I am not a professional athlete at, you know, that caliber. But I'm saying, at what cost is loyalty? But I don't want a guy sticking around if he's going to suck all the cap room and keep key contributors from showing up and playing on my team.
I completely agree, but you got to pay the man what he's owed.
And being from Minnesota, dude, like I'm just being honest.
But at 33, I was gonna mention this before, along with a few other things before we wrapped up. But like, I mean, you said today that the Heat are offering
$36 million for 3 years.
That's $12 million a year at the age of 33.
But remember, Pat Riley took the audacity to give Chris Bosh $120 million.
I was going
to
say, luckily you do.
So that's what I'm saying. It's like, you give Bosh $120 million, and Wade took the pay cut, obviously tried to get LeBron to stay, but it didn't work out, and yet Wade's still stuck with that contract that he had. So it's like, you got it. That was not, like, if you're
but
Pat Riley.
I don't think you're thinking about is the amount of games Dwayne Wade has set out the past couple of years.
20 this past season alone.
Yeah, that's a quarter of the season, man. Like, are you gonna pay $12 million a year for someone who's gonna play 60 games?
But it was what Pat Riley promised he would give him. So, like, that's what I'm saying. If you write down in writing that you're gonna give a man that's what I'm saying.
No, you
have to take care of your franchise guys, because you know what? You don't take care of them, they leave. Guess who's not gonna be happy? The people who are paying money to come see the games at home. The face of the franchise who's made the fucking team relevant, and now he's gone out the door when he could have stayed if you had just done right by him. If I'm a fan, I'm not going to like that. Cool, you acquired this guy in free agency. That's awesome. Hey, maybe we'll go to the playoffs. You still let the face of our franchise leave.
I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm from Minnesota and I've never seen a major championship in my lifetime. I mean, technically, I was a year old when the Twins won. You've seen two titles. Three titles with your boy. One of them, all because of your boy. I'm just saying, as a fan, like, there's more than one guy that makes up a franchise.
Absolutely.
And basically, every single star player, that I've ever rooted for that's put on my team's colors, in some way has dicked me over. In some way. Done something truly embarrassing and shameful. Wade hasn't done that. But at the end of the day, for me, I want my team, the organization itself, to get better every year. I want the team and I want the front office. I feel the front office owes it to the fans to try to put together the best product on the court. And if I was you, I would have full faith that Pat Riley can do that. If he felt it was in his best judgment to leave and let Dwayne Wade go and put a good product together and start building around Bosh, I would be fully behind that. Especially if he already won you titles. And has proven that he knows how to get guys to come to Miami and play. That's all I'm saying.
He does. And is it next year with that whole new salary cap thing's going
to
rise?
Yeah, the
next
salary
year,
cap
right?
is also grown. Is also you
so,
know set to inflate.
You know,
so.
you can afford to throw more money in there, but Absolutely. No, I totally get what you're saying. You obviously want the best product on the court.
That's all I want. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, like, I've learned over time, like, especially after the whole, I don't mean to go too off track on it, but after the whole Adrian Peterson thing, I don't invest in as much personally into players in that way, in the way that people, like, I just don't anymore. I want a really good team. I want a good team that represents its state well, its team well, and that's it. It's really difficult for me to be like, wow, I really like him as a player, and not only do I like him as a player, but I really like him off the field as well, and I love what he's done. Like, for me, it's just like, you know what? He's his own guy. He has his own business. He has his own personal issues to deal with. It's a business. At the end of the day, I'm a fan of a team, and I want my team to do right by its fan base.
That's fair enough.
All right. I feel like we got way off track of the NBA Finals, so let's move back and then absolutely do some trivia, a couple housekeeping things, and then wrap up. You had something, Christian?
I just had a question for everybody right now, like, just their take on the big swing, because we really focused on LeBron a lot, you know, thus far about the Finals. Obviously, he's the best player in the Finals, but the Warriors' response these last two games has been so big. I mean, Kerr lying about the lineup, putting Iguodala in, Iguodala taking over and being, you know, the catalyst. Absolutely. These last couple of games. I mean, I'm so impressed by that. I just wanted to get you guys' thoughts on just, like, Iguodala, for one thing, in this series. I mean, this is what the Warriors are all about. I mean, they've got an all-star, Andre Iguodala, you know, multiple-year all-star, leader of a team in Philadelphia, who's asked to sit the bench behind Harrison Barnes, a 10-point-per-game third-year guy. You know, David Lee, multiple-year all-star, high-scoring player, doesn't do anything. And then they bring him in these last couple of games, and he gives him big minutes. I mean, the Warriors system has been so impressive in terms of just managing egos and getting results now in the Finals. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that in sports. I can't think of a team where guys check their egos so much. And I just love to hear what you guys have to think about it.
I brought it up a couple episodes back. Well, it might be way more than a couple, but there was an article in Sports Illustrated. It was the midseason NBA report, and they talked about Kerr's approach when interviewing for the Warriors job. And I had said something about how when he felt like at the beginning of last offseason, when he's like, I'm ready to coach, I'm ready to be an NBA coach, he started making a Word document, and he grabbed everything that he had ever learned from Popovich, from Phil Jackson, from Jordan, guys he played with, guys that coached him.
Lute Olson, Arizona.
And it grew and grew and grew, and then he turned it into a PowerPoint, and he presented it to the two teams that wanted him the most, the Knicks and the Warriors. And he broke it down so much that he said that he had, apparently in the PowerPoint, specifically how he wanted to use each player.
Wow.
And one of the things that he thought he wasn't sure if he was going to get a lot of pushback on it, but one of the things he really, really wanted to drive home, at least with the Warriors job, was, I want to bring Andre Iguodala off the bench. And he was really worried how a guy like Iguodala was going to take something like that.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, it worked out great throughout the regular season. And now that Kerr has the wherewithal to be like, okay, you know what? That was my initial plan. It worked for 82 games and through most of the playoffs. Now to get to the pinnacle, to the highest point in this sport, in your respective sport, and to have the wherewithal to be like, you know what? Got to change it up.
Yep.
You're starting. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And your players respond to that. And they clearly responded well to it.
Yeah.
And obviously Bogut is cool with it because he doesn't expect to play at all now. Mm-hmm. He said it. He was like, we're winning.
He expects to collect the ring.
Exactly. He's like, whatever.
He's put it in his years. He's earned a ring.
Just goes to show you how much they really look to Bogut, how much they look to Kerr, and how much they really respect his knowledge of the game.
Yep.
What he's the level of knowledge that he's accrued throughout. So I guess that's my take on it. I'm not super surprised, but it's awesome to see. And I mean, obviously Curry lit it up tonight, so I'm sure he's well back on his way to being the Finals MVP. But up to this point, I thought for sure he was definitely the best player on the floor for the Dubs. Absolutely,
I agree. One other thing, I mean, just building on that, I mean, Curry's a first year coach. and he's sitting all-stars on the bench. I mean, that's really, I mean, that's impressive too. The respect for Kerr that you're talking about. I mean, they really do believe in this guy because, I mean, can you imagine if, you know, Blatt had come in and done the same thing? I don't know if they would have bought that. If Brad Stevens a couple of years ago would have done that. Would LeBron have allowed it? Yeah, exactly. But I'm just saying, like, you know, I mean, Kerr's pedigree as a player who has been under great coaches and has gotten his rings, that clicked with the Warriors in a really impressive way. Because they're taking his word and taking less minutes and stats for the sake of his vision. And that's unbelievably impressive.
Not to mention, if they do win, he's going to be joining an elite group of coaches that have won championships as players and as coaches.
Yeah.
Very true.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Not a lot of those.
All right, let's move on. Who wins game 6? Real quick.
Cavs.
Okay.
I mean, I picked Cavs, and I mean, granted, when I picked this, it was under the impression that they might have Kyrie Irving for the entirety of the series, but I did pick Cavs in 7. I'm not going to go back on that. So I do think the Cavs will win game 6. It's going to be a barn burner.
Yeah, it should be a ground. I picked Warriors in 6 at the beginning of this thing. I'm sticking to that.
Warriors close it out.
I think the Warriors close it out. I think they got a really good feel for the Cavs, though the Cavs are going to go to war for this one. It's going to be... I wouldn't be surprised if it gets... if it gets ugly. I mean, because they need to dirty this game up because they can't play a high-octane game. They've got to make it gritty. And they're going to try to throw them off their stride. They're going to do whatever they can. I think it's going to be a war, but I do think the Warriors get through it.
All right. Warriors in 6. That's what I've said from the beginning. That's what I put money on. That's what I'm going with. Warriors close it out. It's going to be a barn burner, but they close it out.
And we could be in store for, let's say the Warriors do win in Cleveland, and the crowd's that raucous and the team is playing dirty. If the Warriors do win, then, yeah, man. I mean, that's going to go down as one of the best wins. We don't know what's in his future, but that could go down maybe as the best win in Steph Curry's career. Going to hostile territory against the greatest player in the NBA.
I mean, to win his first championship, it'll definitely be his best.
In his home court, and you take the abuse, you take the crowd's bullshit, and you still come out with the W.
All right, guys, let's go to trivia, and let's get the hell out of here. It's going to be a short one tonight.
Sorry, Blackhawks.
What?
I said sorry, Blackhawks.
Yeah, quick shout-out to my Blackhawks. What a series. Every game has 2-1. Been decided by one goal.
That's late, insane. Too. Like, right? Hasn't it all been real late? Like, yeah, late goals have won
late.
It.
Yeah, late in the third period. Yeah, it's been crazy. But
What's that kid's name? Saad?
Brandon Saad.
He's my age.
He's awesome.
Our age.
He's awesome.
Wow.
All right, so trivia tonight. Scoured long and hard for a really good NBA Finals question. So.
Ooh, yes, mama. I'm in trouble.
This is where I break out.
Wait a minute. Are we doing that new thing where we write down our answer so that way no one can piggyback off anybody else's answer? Or we can write it down on our phone and just show you.
Hey, y'all.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not kidding you.
I was going to say, pen and paper.
But also, you interrupted me, so I couldn't finish my joke, which is that I didn't find an NBA Finals question, so I'm asking you a random question.
Never mind. I might not be serious. God damn it.
Sweet.
All right, let me know when you guys are ready.
What's up?
Let's do it. All
right, go for it.
All right, guys, this is going to be an easy one. What was the first sport televised in the United States? Is it A, baseball, B, tennis, C, golf, D, rugby?
Can I hear the four again?
First sport televised in the U.S. Baseball, B, tennis, C, golf, D, rugby. I just see a message that says undo typing.
Yeah, my phone sucks.
That is not an
borderline
answer.
Retarded.
He went with E.
Okay. All right, Christian. All right, Steve. Well, Drew answered baseball. Christian answered baseball. And Steve answered baseball.
I mean, it's America's pastime, right? Like, it's got to be.
And that is the correct answer.
Hey!
Sir!
Sweet.
Finally, you guys got one again.
Yeah, we did. We're 2-for-2.
We're still tied.
We are still tied.
You are still tied.
The endless deadlock. Oh my God. It's like the Cold War.
It's terrible. One day,
there's no drama here.
One day, one or two of you will get a question right or wrong instead of just all of you being terrible or great together.
Part of me was about to put tennis simply because, like, I was like, maybe the camera is easier to, like, I didn't know what technology was like back in the day, but you know, baseball, Mary's best time.
That was a good choice. So that's gonna do it. It's a short episode tonight. Some people want to get home to watch the Game of Thrones finale.
Ew!
Some other people. Some other people have to wake up at 6 a.m. for work tomorrow.
Oh, God.
Sorry, buddy.
So we're going to get out of here. But, yeah, this is our new schedule. We're going to do episodes on Sunday nights. They'll be posted late Sunday night or first thing Monday morning. Yeah, that's it. We're hitting the slow time in the year where there's just not a lot of sports. Not a lot of sports that... some of that the majority of our hosts care about. So Steve's like,
the dark times are coming.
They're
pretty much here.
As Steve would say, we're days away from the dark times of the year for sports. So yeah, so we're just gonna keep it to one day a week or one episode a week on Sundays. What, Steve?
You'll be 25 and I'll be 26 the next time either of us see after the finals, of course, before we see another basketball game or a hockey game. So
oh my God.
That is very true.
Fuck. I wish all our listeners could have seen the look on Steve's face just there. The horror.
Happens every year.
The horror.
It's like when January 1st rolls around, it's like, fuck. It's like Christmas is so far away.
I've missed this. All right, you guys know the drill. Facebook.com/51yardline. Follow us on Twitter @51yardline, Instagram 51yardline, blah blah blah, 51yardline.com, even though we haven't posted there in like 2 weeks. But whatever, I'll figure it out. We'll get back to it. Okay, for Steve Cravens.
Happy birthday, Mom. Love you, miss you.
Oh, that's really nice. Happy birthday, Mrs. Cravens.
Happy birthday, Mrs. Cravens.
For Christian Steiner.
Finish the job, Dubs.
Lock it.
For True Willers.
Congrats to Byron Buxton getting called up. Scored the game-winning run today for the Minnesota Twins. He did go 0-4 with 2 strikeouts. But he's here, and...
We're not having another Teddy Bridgewater situation. Just calm the fuck down.
I was not trying to do that
I know,
all.
I'm
you fucked. Say one thing in the heat of passion, and you're hammered in a bar, and everybody holds it over your head for the rest of your life?
I'm sorry. You think you said one thing? You talked about that shit for 4 weeks.
Yeah, man, I was pretty drunk. But
yeah, well, he threw his, he was losing games. He was throwing interceptions in the red zone. Sorry, man.
And then he started doing well, and I was right.
Peyton Manning, Dan Marino, Tom Brady, Christian Ponder, Dante Culpepper, Warren Moon.
Randall. Don't forget Randall.
Randall Cunningham. I'm just saying. Quarterbacks are hard to come by in Minnesota.
I mean, Joe Montana would have been accepted, too.
I'll take that, too.
Steve Young, I would have taken that.
Yeah, that ended great. That went so awesome.
What are we doing? Oh, yeah.
Saying goodbye.
I mean, I'll talk about Brett Favre. I love... Honestly, hold on. I wouldn't talk about Brett Favre.
I would listen
to Drew talk about Brett Favre. That's what I would do.
No, because then we're going to be here for another fucking 30 minutes.
I was
going to
say, man,
minutes.
We're going to be here for a while.
I got nothing going on. I'll pour myself another.
We've officially become the in-laws who won't leave.
All right. Get out of my... I'm going to get out of your ears, and you guys get out of my fucking house. Goodbye.